the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, there's a recent article that came out from CNBC talking about the wealthy are seeking second passports. What is it they know that we don't? Well, let's find out. Joining us on the program from Latitude is Chris Willis. Chris, I was really struck by things that we're starting to see that the super wealthy are doing. You know, people like Eric Schmidt, you got other people like Peter Thiel. You even have Mark Zuckerberg that is building an underground bunker in Hawaii. What are these guys seeing that the rest of us don't know?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, you referenced some people here, you know, a lot of the smart money's already done this. And so many people are now following their lead and realizing, you know what, I need to have some more options. Because right now there's a lot of uncertainty in the U.S. A lot of people are nervous about a variety of things. You know, no matter, you know, where you sit, there's something that's going to, you know, push you over the edge to say, you know, enough's enough. I want to make sure that if things go sideways, that there's somewhere I can go and I can have legal status to be there. So it's not necessarily saying you're going to leave the U.S., but it's having the option to do so if you needed to do it. And that's what people want, is that peace of mind. You know, whether you want to call it a non-traditional insurance policy or a plan B, you know, it's just having that option in place and being able to enhance your freedoms by having those extra opportunities to travel and stay somewhere.
This may sound strange for, you know, America has been such a stable place. But, you know, I think back just before World War II, what was going on in Nazi Germany. Let's say you were a Jewish person and seeing things go like that. And, you know, it's amazing because anti-Semitism is growing in the U.S., but we're also seeing a lot more instability. We're seeing lawlessness. Like, for example, I live in San Diego, where literally our borders are being overrun. It's not safe to go downtown at night. And so, you know, wealthy people are seeing this too. I mean, you're seeing it around Beverly Hills. They're moving out of that area. So is it basically political instability?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, as I mentioned, everybody's got their own push factor. You know, when Roe versus Wade was overturned, that upset a lot of people. And they were saying, look, I want to, you know, have another option somewhere else. It could be a mass shooting. It could be increase in taxes. It could be threats to Second Amendment rights. There's so many reasons why people could look at this and eventually determine that enough is enough. And, you know, your reference, you know, to World War II and, you know, the Jewish people who were persecuted or displaced through persecution, I should say, they actually still have opportunities today. So in countries like Austria, Poland, Germany, you know, if you can prove that displacement through persecution, you can actually get citizenship in those countries if you're able to show it. So all those events that happened so many years ago are still relevant today in our business, you know, in the citizenship business. But for the majority of people who don't qualify for some of those programs, you know, the buy investment is what the wealthy elite are looking at. And it's really becoming, you know, not necessarily the newest trend, but it's the new sort of must have, if you like, for the wealthy elite. Because, you know, for the minimum investment levels in the Caribbean, starting, you know, at 100,000 US, it's affordable, you know, and many will spend that on a long weekend. And the difference here is this is for life, and, you know, it's for your kids, and it allows you to have that option to go forward with. And like I said, everybody's got their own reasons, but it's having that optionality to say, here's where I want to go. I'll give you an example. So during the pandemic, you may remember there was a travel ban for American passport holders. And so it didn't matter who you were. If you only had a U.S. passport, you know, your wings were clipped and you were grounded. You weren't going to Europe. You weren't going to Singapore. You weren't going to the UAE. And that was problematic for a lot of these people who were accustomed to just hopping on a plane and going somewhere. And so that was a wake-up call for many of them. And in particular, a lot of the family offices we work with, you know, their principals have said, hey, you know, you've got to plug this gap, because we were very, very exposed here. And if something like that happens again, we need to know that we've covered that base. So that was a real life example that really got people's attention on the passport space. Because if you had a second passport, you could travel on that one, right? When your American one was no longer accepted. Obviously, it's self-corrected now and you can still travel freely as an American. But it's just having, again, that option, you know, without sounding too corny, you know, it's the better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it. And that's what people are just want to make sure they have that peace of mind.
Yeah, it's kind of like driving a car with a spare tire. You know, one thing that I have seen, and this may not be related in that measure, because of the cost of living in the U.S., I'm seeing a lot of people that I have one client that retired in Costa Rica, one of the blue zones in the world. I have another high-tech couple that work for two of the biggest high-tech companies in the United States. They're going to retire, and they're going to Italy. So they just like it there. Compared to, they don't feel safe here anymore for whatever reasons, crime. As you mentioned, everybody has their own reasons. Where are places? I mean, the United States for such a long time was considered a place of stability, but I think in personal freedoms, we're ranked now 35. Where are people going? So where are the Peter Thiels or the super wealthy? Are there particular areas where they feel that they're safe?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I guess the most popular places are Europe and the Caribbean. And, you know, each of these options, you know, will depend on the needs of the client. So in the Caribbean, for example, it's applications for citizenship. So you don't have to go through a residency process. You make a direct investment, which allows you to get naturalized and get citizenship, and then of course a passport. And you know, those are there's five countries in the Caribbean that offer this. So you have St. Kitts and Nevis, Antigua, Barbuda, St. Lucia, Dominica, and Grenada. And these are very popular because it's relatively inexpensive, it's relatively quick, and it's geographically very close to the United States. So if you have to hop on a plane and get down there, you're there within a couple of hours. But if some people are looking at Europe as a solution, Malta is extremely popular because it takes about 18 months to process and you would get citizenship, which then means you have settlement rights across the European Union. So you can live, work, study, retire in all the member states by virtue of your Maltese citizenship. Now, the difference here, of course, is the price point. You know, Malta, you're looking at around about €1 million, which is non-recoverable, versus that 100,000 that I mentioned in the Caribbean. So there's definitely the element of you get what you pay for. But for many people, Malta is the solution that they want. Because you've also got residency programs in places like Spain, Portugal, and Greece, which just give you a residence card. So it means you can stay indefinitely in those jurisdictions, but it doesn't give you the right to reside in other European member states. So if you did Portugal, you can live, work in Portugal, no problem. Same for Spain, same for Greece. Portugal does have a pathway to citizenship, which the others don't, which is quite attractive. And, you know, they made some changes recently, you may be aware of, but essentially, it's €500,000 you're investing. Most people invest in funds, which you would look to get back after about 6 or 7 years, depending on the fund option you go for. And as long as you can do 7 days a year, you know, for 5 years, then you can then be eligible to be naturalized in Portugal. So it's you know, half the price of Malta, but it's going to take about 8 years versus the 18 months that it would take for you to get your citizenship in Malta. So, you know, to answer your question, it's the Caribbean and Europe is where people are looking to go to. Eric Schmidt did Cyprus when they had a program, and Peter Thiel did New Zealand. And, you know, I think he upset a few people because he kind of went against the grain because he was bringing in, you know, a significant investment. And so he was able to get it. And they've now closed that option that he used to get his citizenship in New Zealand. But, you know, a lot of people like New Zealand because it's away from everything, right? And so, you know, when you were talking about Mark Zuckerberg going to Hawaii and building his bunker, and, you know, people are just want to make sure that if they have the means, they want to take care of themselves and their close family. And so they're putting these precautions in place.
What about, Chris, Switzerland? For a long time, Switzerland was considered, I know a lot of wealthy were able to shelter their income. I think the U.S. did away with that or forced Switzerland to reveal people. What about Switzerland?
Yeah, Switzerland's very bespoke because you have to negotiate with each canton on what your tax contribution, you know, would be per year. And, you know, for Americans, it's also a little bit more challenging because you're still taxed on your citizenship as opposed to your residency. So, you know, it's more attractive for people who are non-US, you know, if you're a Canadian or a Brit or whatever it may be, you know, it's a different tax rules as where you're taxed on your residency and where you're spending the majority of your time, as opposed to the tax on your citizenship, which Americans are having to endure, unfortunately. So it's very bespoke, but it does depend which canton you want to go to and what lump sum, tax you would be looking to pay once you negotiate with the cantons. And some are more expensive than others, so it's for the right person, it's a good fit, but it's more the exception as opposed to the rule.
But doesn't the US, Chris, impose an exit tax? Or I think if you go overseas and you give up your citizenship, you still have to file US tax returns for 10 years. Is that still in place?
Well, if you're renouncing, that's a whole different conversation. And some people, certainly look at that and then decide if they are going to renounce their citizenship, their US citizenship, then you're absolutely right. There is an exit tax that's calculated. Some people may look down the line and say, hey, I'm going to renounce in 5 years. So let me set up my affairs now so that I've got, say, fewer assets in the US. They may be in the Caribbean or they're in Europe or wherever it may be. So therefore, they can minimize their exit tax because there's calculations in terms of what that tax would be. And, full disclosure, I'm not a tax person, I'm an immigration person. So we can certainly connect people with specialists in that space. But yes, it does get quite complicated, especially for the wealthy, who may have complicated structures they need to unwind and make sure they're not getting too much tax exposure.
So I know you're not a tax expert, but since we have an exit tax and a reporting requirement, I think for 10 years, I guess the government's looking for, hey, if you're going to Switzerland and you're giving up your citizenship and all of a sudden your income quadruples, the US government is interested in that. Are there ways, at least have you heard, are there ways that you can minimize this exit tax? Like, let's say I go to Portugal for 5 years. I get a passport, and 5 years I go, I like living it here. I'm not going back to the United States. I'm going to give up my citizenship. Does that make a difference if you've been living there for a while?
Yeah, I mean, they'll look because I'll give you an example. You have many people who were born. I mean, I'm Canadian. A lot of people were Canadians were born in the U.S. Lived their whole life in Canada, never really had much of a connection to the United States apart from it being the country of their birth, and they still have to file. Or you have Americans living abroad, such as the example you gave of spending 5 years in Portugal. So they're not having that daily, that they're not living in the U.S. and so they feel burdened of having to file. So if you decide that you're going to be overseas, and your count the calculations will be looked upon in terms of what income are you generating in the United States and what income are you generating outside of the United States, but also where are you spending your time. So if it looks like your calculations will be affected, well, they will be improved if you're not physically in the US. Spending money and paying taxes in the US because your income is generated overseas. And just a small sidebar here, Jim, is that, when we were talking about, you mentioned a tech couple, is many people nowadays don't need to physically be in the US to conduct their business. So many people are looking at other parts of the world. As long as they've got a phone and a laptop and a good Wi-Fi connection, they can still manage their affairs. And so, to your point about not wanting to be in areas where there's crime or concerns about being out at night and such, they would rather conduct their businesses from other parts of the world.
Yeah, one of the things that we've done, I can think of two particular cases. We were working on a financial plan. The couples, in both cases, they had substantial amounts in their IRA from retirement plans they had at work and savings. And so in the US, at age 73, you have to start taking mandatory distributions from an IRA. So one of the things that we did, that one couple is in Costa Rica and another one is in Europe, is that we changed their domicile to a tax-free state because they weren't going to avoid federal income taxes, but at least they could avoid paying state taxes, especially when you live in California, which has a high tax rate now of 14.4%, the highest in the country. So we had them change their domicile. And one couple that was Texas, and it just so happened that's where one of their kids lived. So they're still filing their federal tax return. They're now having to take distributions from their IRAs, which are mandatory, but at least they cut out the state of California.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where, getting proper tax advice can save significant money, but it's also being able to demonstrate that you've got status outside of the US. And that's not just being a visitor. I'll give you an example of it. During the pandemic, again, someone had a multi-million dollar property on a Caribbean island, but the Caribbean island shut their borders during the pandemic unless you were a citizen. So he wanted to go and, wait out the pandemic there, but they wouldn't let him in because he didn't have the proper status. And so just something as small as that, made the difference of him having to, deal with a pandemic in the US or, being able to stay, nicely away from everything on a Caribbean island. So the concept of having proper status, being a citizen or a permanent resident, is key. And, when I talk about permanent residents in the US context, that would be like a green card holder, for example. And so places like Portugal, their residence card would be like a green card, but citizenship, is a passport, right? And that's for life. And just such a great asset to have in your back pocket if you ever needed it.
So let's tie in the passport with, let's say, temporary residency, like the equivalent of a green card. How does that work? Is it, do you have to have a job? Do you have to make an investment? What are the rules or regs regarding that?
So in Portugal, as I mentioned, it's 500,000 euro. In Spain, it's also 500,000 euro. But you have options to invest in real estate as opposed to just in funds, even though there's some proposals to take away or to amend the real estate options. It gets you your permanent resident card, typically, which is valid for 5 years, and then you renew that every 5 years. But there's no day count requirement to renew it. Portugal, we talked about the 7 days a year, which most people can manage. You also have options in Greece as well, which again just gives you, doesn't give you the pathway to citizenship. It just gives you the ability to stay in that country essentially indefinitely, as long as you keep doing your renewals. So it's, and of course, without the citizenship, you can't have a passport and you don't have the rights to vote, which, for some people isn't important, but it's more having the citizenship because, as I mentioned, that's for life. And then you could not go there for 30 years and then you decide you want to go, you can just rock up and you've got full access to everything in the country.
It's funny. Most of my best friends are Canadians. A couple of them are living overseas. And I think Canada has, if you're out of the country for 6 months out of the year, you don't have to pay the steep Canadian income taxes. Good reason to leave Canada. But the other thing is, like, my father was born in Europe. So what would be the chances of me getting a second passport?
Yeah, great question. I mean, I'll tell you a very interesting story because we deal with citizenship by descent as well. So that's, through your ancestry. And, we were speaking to someone who was very interested in the program in Malta. And, we just noticed his surname and sounded very Italian. So we said, what's your connection to Italy? And, when we dug a little bit deeper, it turned out he was eligible through descent. And so we essentially saved him 1 million euro because we were able to get his Italian citizenship through his ancestry, as opposed to him having to go through the investment route through Malta. So absolutely, depending on the ancestral links that can be documented, whether it's purely through lineage, so parents, grandparents, etc., or as I mentioned, the example of for the Jewish community who were displaced through persecution, they also have options as well. So it's part of our job is to get to know the client better, see what their background is, what their motivations are, their timelines, their budget, and then we can guide them on what the best solutions would be.
Yeah, because both my parents are European. I'm first generation American. So if my parents were born there, I would assume that would be much easier for me to get a passport.
Absolutely. Which country, Jim, were they born in?
Czechoslovakia.
Okay. So we'll go back. We have to check where, obviously, since the country's been divided now, to see where, if you still Czech Republic, if it's Slovakia, where you were born, and then we know where they were born, and then we can look at what the rules would be. So, yeah, happy to explore that for you.
So, given this, it's kind of like, once again, I use the analogy of a spare tire. You never know when you're going to have a flat, and you don't know what is happening in terms of instability that we're seeing more and more of it in the United States, which is probably why you're seeing Mark Zuckerberg build a bunker in Hawaii, or Peter Thiel or Eric Schmidt getting a second passport. When you are doing this for other individuals, is it mainly this kind of like having an option if things get bad here? Is that the main reason that's driving this?
Yeah, a lot of it. And you know, touching on the experience they had during the pandemic when the passport was didn't allow them to travel. And so it's just covering all the bases to make sure that for any eventuality that they have options. That's really the main thing. You know, right now, with the election coming up in November, a lot of people are getting their affairs in order now instead of waiting to see what happens in November. And as I said right at the beginning of our chat, you know, the smart money has already done this, right? So it's just people are now realizing this is a necessity as part of my overall planning and structuring. And so it's then determining which option do they want to go for. You know, do they want something in the Caribbean or do they want to look at a sort of a higher quality citizenship in the European Union, you know, which gives them those settlement rights.
Now, let's say my parents were born there, which would give me a little bit easier to get a passport. My wife's grandparents were born in Europe. So if only one person has lineage in Europe, how does that apply if you're married, and how does that apply to your children?
Yeah, very good question. So it's typically gonna, it varies from country to country, but it is through the bloodline. So spouse would not be eligible. So if your wife was eligible through her own lineage, then we could explore that as well. Some of them are just two generations, others are, you know, indefinite. So we would have to look at each country individually, see where the links are, and also what documents we have to support it. Because, you know, part of this, you know, we assist in document procurement if people, you know, don't have these records, you know, from these countries. And in the case of somewhere like Czechoslovakia, where, you know, where records destroyed, you know, where are the current borders and all that, it's important to do that proper research to make sure we can prove, you know, what's being claimed on an application.
What about your children?
Yeah, again, depends on the number of generations each country will allow. So if you know, you're, because what you could then technically do is your kids could apply and you would get it as well because you're part of that lineage over the prescribed amount of generations. So it does vary from country to country, as I mentioned. Like in Ireland, for example, you know, it's just parents and grandparents. You can't go further back. But in Italy, you can go further back, depending on what documents you can provide.
Yeah, the one couple we're working with now, the tech couple, that's what they're doing. They're going to Italy. I'm not quite sure what they're going to end up doing, but they will be changing their residence from California to Nevada, because at some point they're going to have to be drawing down on their pensions, and they don't want to pay California steep income taxes. But they were going there by on vacations. You find that, like, even for some people that they travel. I have one client that spends a lot of the time of the year traveling. His favorite spot is Europe. He loves Spain, loves Portugal, loves Italy, are some of his favorite places. So, do you find just because they enjoy living in, let's say, a European culture or the old world, as we call it?
Yeah, I think it definitely helps if they've been exposed to it, they've seen it, they have a comfort level. I think it certainly helps. But I've also got clients who've never, you know, left the US, you know, and so they're just saying, I want to now go and explore the world and I want to have the ability to do it. And if I see somewhere I like, I want to know that I can stay there. So that's where, you know, having the settlement rights in the EU was a solution for them. So, you know, it really depends on each person, but I think the more connections and, you know, the wealthy, you know, Americans have traveled, you know, they have been to certain parts of the world and they're going to have their favorites, you know, and a lot of people like, you know, the old countries, like you say, with the history, you know, going into Spain, going to Italy, going to Portugal, where it's a whole different life experience than what you would have in the United States.
And do you find sometimes, even with travel in times of intense conflict, I can think of the Second Gulf War. My youngest son graduated from college. He went overseas in a group. I think it were like 30 people. Most of them were from New Zealand, Australia, touring. And he kind of went along with the New Zealanders because there was a lot of anti-sentiment against the U.S. at the time because of the Gulf War.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, to give you another example, I mean, if you're an American and you travel to sensitive parts of the world, you know, you don't want to check into a hotel as an American, right? If you check in as a Caribbean national, no one's gonna even notice you. But you know, you never know. Is the person behind the desk, you know, selling a list of guests saying, you know, there's an American in room 12. You know, you never know. And so, you know, when you look at elements like kidnap insurance and you know, high profile people, again, the more they're able to sort of stay under the radar a little bit, this can be an important part of, you know, their ability to travel and go to certain parts of the world. you know, heaven forbid you're in a sort of hostage situation. And, you know, we saw this recently with what's happening in Israel and Gaza, where people coming off a plane had to hold up their passports, you know, and if you have two in your pocket, you can pick and choose which one you want to disclose. And, you know, these are, again, this is a bit extreme, of course, but it's reasons why people look at this. Just again, it's that non-traditional insurance policy, and something as simple as that as having a second option, you know, could be a difference between, you know, life and death in some cases.
You ever get cases where, like, I'm thinking of a couple of clients of mine. I have one down in Costa Rica. They just went because they liked it. It was cheaper for living. I know I've been to Mexico, and there are big American communities down there where, you know, the US dollar goes a long way in Mexico versus the US.
Well, you're right. I mean, a lot of these countries like Costa Rica, Honduras, El Salvador at the moment is talking about offering citizenship to certain people. They're looking at ways to generate foreign direct investment that they couldn't do otherwise. But the challenge is that the policies to get residency are not as defined, let's say, as what they are in some of these citizenship programs who are attracting people who actually want to get proper status. And to your earlier point about, you know, talking about the Canadians and the 183-day rule, you know, it's how long they can stay in Mexico or Costa Rica if they buy a property. I've heard stories of people that have had very bad experiences dealing with local providers down there. And so it's not as clean cut, let's say, as in other parts of the world. But from a lifestyle perspective, yes. I know some of them. I mean, Mexico's has had its challenges with security as well, which is something that some people are a bit concerned about. But it goes back to, you know, what is the person after? I mean, we've had people, you know, come to us talking about, I want to set up in Puerto Rico, help me work that out. But that's not what we do. We focus more on the, you know, very clear and prescribed, you know, residence and citizenship programs that are designed purely by investment. Because you can go there if you're married to a national or if you get a work permit. There's all different elements of immigration that can allow people to get in. But we focus purely on the by investment or by descent. You know, that's all we focus on. And if people say, hey, I'm married to a citizen of Costa Rica, then, you know, we can refer them on to someone who can assist with that type of application. But I always say to people who are looking at some of these jurisdictions is, you know, make sure you check it out because it's not always, you know, the grass isn't always greener, right? And just because the cost of living is low, you know, there's going to be a trade-off as well in terms of what's the healthcare like? You know, what happens if you know, something like that happens? What's your backup? So there's a lot of other elements that would come into it in terms of why people would look at, say, Mexico or Costa Rica over and above, say, European jurisdiction.
And also, what about the rule of law and property rights? So, let's say I would think one of the standard investments, and I don't know, a friend of mine who is a Canadian, he bought a home in Switzerland in a canton, and his taxes are based on the homes that he owns in the canton. Are there certain areas that maybe the best way to make an investment in that country to get either a green card or even eventually citizenship is to buy a residence?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, you know, many Americans are looking to divest out of the US. And so instead of buying, you know, a condo in South Beach or something, they're saying, well, why don't we buy a property in let's say, a Caribbean island? And by virtue of that investment, they also qualify for citizenship, economic citizenship. So it's that sort of twofer model, right? If you pardon the Canadian expression, you know, you get the two for one. You know, you're acquiring the asset, you've got that asset overseas, and as a benefit of that investment, you've now got economic citizenship as well. So, you know, many of the programs offer a real estate component. Some are better than others. You know, a lot of them tend to be linked to hotel resorts where you're actually either buying a share into the resort or you're buying a unit within the resort where you can use it or you can put it into the rental pool and generate some income as well. But there's also other options. If, you know, let's say you really like, let's say, an island in the Caribbean, you could get your economic citizenship that way, but then you have full access to the open market if you wanted to buy a larger property. But as you're now a citizen, you're not subject to things like alien landholding taxes and all that type of thing. And the process to buy will be much more straightforward. So again, it goes back to what the client's after, but absolutely, you know, real estate is a big part of this in terms of a vehicle to qualify for residency or citizenship.
And a final question on taxation, but some countries, if you're living there, they require you to pay taxes. Like my friend that lives in Switzerland, he pays a tax to the canton. If you're a U.S. citizen and you choose to, let's say, move or establish residency in another country that taxes you, isn't there some kind of tax treaty where some of the taxes you pay to that country will offset what you pay in the U.S.?
Yeah, my understanding is, assuming there is a tax treaty, so let's say you're in a Caribbean island or you're in Europe, you know, you would only be taxed on the income you generate in that jurisdiction. And so whatever that would equate to would then be reallocated back to your U.S. tax return, and then there would be a calculation, so you're not paying double tax, essentially. That's how I understand it. And correct me if I'm wrong, as I said, it's not my specialty, but that's my understanding, is that you're not taxed twice as long as you pay tax on the income you generate in the other jurisdiction.
All right. As we close, if any of the listeners would like to find out about getting a passport and work with your firm, tell them how they can do so.
Yeah, the easiest way, Jim, is to go to our website, which is latitudeworld.com. You can find me on the team link. My details are all there. You can get in touch with me directly. The website also has details on all the programs that are available. So you can find out, you know, what's involved in Malta, what's involved in the Caribbean, what's involved in Portugal and Spain, etc. So, you know, please visit the website and reach out, and we'd be delighted to help you.
Thanks so much for joining us on the program. Interesting trend that we're starting to see. I wanted to have you back on the show because the article coming out of CNBC really struck a nerve with me, because you're seeing more and more, because I'm seeing it in my own clientele who are wanting to move overseas, so for the very reason. So thanks so much for the information.
Pleasure, Jim. Always happy to chat with you, and I'll happy to help anytime you need it.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.